Coming up on Tech News Today, Ellen Powell and Erica Baker join us to talk all about Project Include. India prevents Apple from selling its refurbished iPhones in the country. Periscope hired an editor-in-chief while Medium moves away from publishing. And Ping Pong could shed some light on the existence of a tech bubble. All that and more coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1505, recorded Tuesday, May 3rd, 2016.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you all of the ingredients to cook fresh, delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first two meals free by going to blueapron.com/twit. That's blueapron.com/twit.
And by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/TNT.
And by Trunk Club. Get clothes that fit and look amazing without ever stepping into a store again. Trunk Club will help you create the wardrobe you've always dreamed of with your own personal stylist. Go to trunkclub.com/TNT and join Trunk Club today.
Hey!
Hi there!
Hi!
Welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we talk about the tech news, all of it that we find most important and compelling for you. I am so glad to have you back. I'm Megan Maroney, by the way.
And I'm Jason Howell. It's good to be back. It's been kind of a crazy weekend. I will not lie or make any bones about that. Full of ear infections, full of dental surgery. It's just one thing after another. So tech news, I can do that.
Yeah, just a full-on circus at your house, huh?
Yeah, and I apologize if, like, when I smile, you see a little piece of gum up there. That's, like, part of it's. That's not chewing gum. It's just awkward. And you're going to see it from time to time when I smile. So deal with it. That's all I can say.
That's a good enough reason to stop listening to the audio version and watch, yeah. I think.
Or maybe the opposite, actually, Megan. All right, let's do this.
All right. Well, what happens to all those old iPhones of those of us who upgrade compulsively? According to a report in Bloomberg today, they are not going to India. A telecommunications official told Bloomberg that the Indian government will prevent Apple from selling refurbished iPhones in the country. Now, opponents of Apple's plan to sell refurbished iPhones in India say the used devices would destroy the country's Make in India plan to encourage local manufacturing. So even last night, Tim Cook did a pretty crazy interview with Jim Cramer on CNBC and was saying, you know, trying to defend all of the people saying that Apple is over, doomed. And he was saying part of their plan is to sell devices in India. So this is not good news for them.
Well, I mean, India just, you know, there's so many people. So, right, the market, if what you need to do as a tech company is open up into new markets that bring in just that vast amount of, you know, just sheer potential customers, India is definitely one of those untapped markets. I think what we're seeing is actually a little bit of a theme here with just Apple having a challenge recurring or just tech companies in general having recurring challenges inside India. It was just, last month or a couple of months ago that Facebook's Free Basics internet proposal was rejected from within India. And they were basically, you know, protecting their citizens from being, you know, kind of roped into this internet that has all of these asterisks and kind of, you know, raises the bottom line of a tech company, let's say, in exchange for all of those, you know, people that might be exchanging data with Facebook. It's kind of the same thing here, right? It's kind of a theme of Facebook really kind of protecting its population. And in some ways, I mean, I don't know if they actually feel this way, but seeing the tech companies as having more of an insular kind of reason for doing this as opposed to helping. Having said that, I mean, selling, you know, these devices to a population that might not be able, let's say, to afford those devices otherwise, I think that's pretty good. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty lofty goal, I think.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Apple sold 56% more iPhones in India last quarter, but that's only 2% of India's total sales that comes from Engadget. So, yeah, I think I think that this isn't the last we've heard about this.
Probably personally. Not. Yeah. So what's the next tech company to encounter issues in India? I guess it has to be Google, right? Facebook, Apple, LinkedIn. I don't know.
Yeah.
LinkedIn's the obvious choice.
Right.
Let's see here. So Fiat Chrysler is planning to partner up with Google on creating a number of self-driving prototype minivans based on the Pacifica model. Sources told Bloomberg that the co-op plug-in hybrid could be available as early as this year. Now, this is, you know, these are kind of, you know, the sources familiar, that sort of thing. So it's not confirmed at this point. Deal is said to be non-exclusive, so it wouldn't just be limited to Fiat Chrysler working with Google. Google really right now has, you know, ambitions to work with all sorts of manufacturers. Not all of those are working necessarily. I guess there was a GM deal that fell through last month based on, you know, kind of figuring out who would own the parts of the technology as well as the data, because at the heart of all of this, of course, is data. So, but anyways, could be an interesting self-driving vehicle, you know, cooperation with Google happening like way sooner than I would have imagined. On a commercial scale.
Definitely. I mean, it is the first deal with a car maker that mm-hmm. is, I mean, like you said, fell through. that's really happening. So it's interesting. They're minivans. They're bigger. I mean, there's this tiny little Google self-driving cars, and then the Lexuses that are bigger. The minivan is even bigger. So I guess that maybe might be threatening to more people. I don't know.
I mean, self-driving minivan, large families, they got a lot in their mind. So maybe they just let the car drive and they deal with, you know, passing the coloring book to the kids in the back seat and that sort of stuff. I think it's a good move.
They're iPads now.
True. They don't even know what a coloring book is. They just want to tap the color and then tap the blank spot and have it fill up with glorious red.
Yes, exactly. By the time the self-driving minivan is really on the road, yeah, we'll definitely have what's a coloring book? So in today's live streaming news, CNN Money says Periscope has hired an editor-in-chief because apparently live video is the new journalism. Thankfully for us, I guess. Evan Hansen has worked at CNET, Wired.com, and Medium. And now he is at Twitter's live streaming network. He says his job will sort of be to separate the wheat from the chaff, or the videos of people live streaming breaking news from the videos of people live streaming themselves eating sandwiches.
Which could be considered breaking news depending on who you are.
or depending could be a really on good the sandwich. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So this is fascinating to me. Live video is one of those things that is just very right now and what's going to happen. And at the same time, we're kind of like, what's next with journalism? There's a lot of people saying, like, video is everything. So this is so interesting to me that they've hired an editor-in-chief and someone from Medium, which mm-hmm. also is interesting to me because now, right now, Medium, that means Medium doesn't have an editor-in-chief.
You're kind of a Medium fangirl right now.
I am.
You have been. The Medium stories come up and you're always like, interested.
Well, I'm interested in what Medium is. Like, is it a platform or is it a magazine?
That's the big question.
You know? So
yeah.
That's the thing. Like, if they feel like they don't need an editor-in-chief, maybe they are just a platform.
Yeah, that's I think, the kind of the question that a lot of people are asking Medium, you know, like, what are you? Are you a platform? Are you a publisher? And it really kind of seems like they're moving towards the platform side of things. Obviously, this removes one of those big key components to being a publisher. There's also Stephen Levy. He has the back channel mm-hmm. tech hub that was created for Medium. There's sources that are telling, I think it was Peter Kafka at Recode, that Stephen might actually be moving back channel to Condé Nast away from Medium. And that would basically end Medium's role as publisher in that regard, because that's so tightly, you know, such a tight kind of cooperation. I mean, it's specifically for Medium, and that would be the move away from it entirely. So is Medium strong enough as a platform to not need the publisher side of things at this point? I mean, maybe the publisher side of things has helped to prove the platform.
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, but Bill Simmons, you know, he's taken the ringer to Medium, and that, I mean, he has a huge audience, came from ESPN, and really was a champion for, like, I want to do this my way. He brought, like, a great, amazing audience to ESPN and mm-hmm. had his website that people came to, and ESPN was kind of like, what are you doing? Like, they never gave it the attention that mm-hmm. it deserved. And so, you know, he made some mistake. He said something he shouldn't have, or in the moment, as some of us are often do. And, you know, and then he was gone. And obviously his audience went with him. So yeah. I do think, yeah, I mean, Medium is great. All the stories on Medium look fantastic, even if they're incredibly poorly written.
They look amazing. Yes. At least there's that.
Even if their ideas are not thought through and basically wrong, they look amazing.
Platform. That works, and I think there's great potential. It probably removes a little bit of the complexity. Like, they're just two different beasts, right? Platform mm-hmm. versus publishing. So maybe this helps a little more with the focus aspect of things. Okay, so this is just a patent application. We all know that it means it could either happen or it could not happen. But Sony filed a patent for smart contact lenses with camera technology that activates when the wearer blinks their eye. The picture would then be sent wirelessly to an external device. More details about this mythical thing that doesn't quite exist yet. Light sensor on eyelid actually detects the movement of the eyelid, so that that will tell, you know, the contact lens whether you've blinked and take that picture. You could also zoom, focus, and change the aperture. This is like the most complicated contact lens ever. You could also preview the image that you've taken displayed on the contact lens. How far out are we from this, actually? Now that I'm like actually saying the words out loud, I feel like this is complete science fiction.
I don't know. I mean, I want creepy contact lens cameras on my eyeballs.
You bring up a really good point. Creepy.
Oh, like, totally creepy.
But mind you, I wore Google Glass for a while, so I guess I didn't like make the connection.
Yeah, no, but, it's Google Glass without anyone knowing you.
Ever.
Do you have contacts?
I do wear contacts.
And they could have cameras right now. How would we know?
I'm pretty sure I don't have a camera attached to my contact and didn't just take 10 pictures.
And I should stop being creeped out by like having someone take my picture when we're live streaming this.
But there is something to be said, right, for the total like elusive nature of, yeah, I mean, it's just your eyeball. I would imagine, anyways, as long as there isn't like a little blinking light on your eyeball that tells people that you're taking a picture or that you're recording video or whatever, how would anyone know?
Yeah. It's weird and creepy, and I want it.
Yeah, there you go. Sony is not the only one to do the like high-tech contact lens. We've seen a couple of these things, specifically Google Contact Lens, which I think has been kind of in the lore sphere.
Well, yeah,
that's a new word, probably.
They had patent 2014. Pending. Their patent was pending. So I'm curious if, like, because these seem pretty similar. How different could two contact lens cameras be?
In this case, it would be a camera, and that case, it's actually for monitoring glucose levels.
Oh, right. Oh, okay.
So it was more like a medical application.
Well, there was.
How much technology can you fit in that tiny little thing? I just don't understand how this is even possible right now.
Nanotechnology.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
I don't get the nano at all.
I do think that Google also had a patent pending for a camera contact lens. That was in one of the CNET stories that I read. Yes. But patent pending, whereas this is a real patent awarded to Sony for my creepy contact
and
lenses.
And we're guaranteed to see it someday, maybe not ever.
Right, exactly. And when we'll have the same conversation about how creepy they are. Well, after the break, there's a new group of super women on the scene fighting the good fight for diversity in tech. I know you'll want to stick around to find out what their capes look like. But first, let's take a minute to thank Blue Apron, the sponsor of this episode. Home-cooked meals, they're the best. Jason comes in here with his leftovers from his home-cooked meals. It makes me very jealous.
Mm-hmm.
He does. I am excellent with a can of soup, and I'm also excellent with my Blue Apron box because all the hard work has been done for me. Because let's be honest, this right here time would be the time I would be at the grocery store shopping and meal planning. Instead, I'm here talking about the tech news, knowing that a Blue Apron box is home waiting for me to cook it, or for my husband to cook it, or one of my children, or someone besides me. Although I have done it, and I can do it, and it's super easy. Blue Apron has me covered. It could have you covered, too. For less than $10 per meal, Blue Apron delivers all the fresh ingredients you need to create home-cooked meals. Just follow the easy step-by-step instructions. Each meal can be prepared in 40 minutes or less. No overwhelming trips to the grocery store. No more sad takeout. No matter your dietary preference, Blue Apron makes it a breeze to discover and prepare dishes like General Chow's chicken with sautéed snow peas and jasmine rice, or spicy vegetable tteokbokki.
To say that, tteokbokki.
I can't say it, but I can eat it.
Oh, yeah, I'd eat that.
With asparagus, soft-boiled eggs, and ginger cashews. all this right in your own kitchen. Cook with ingredients that you've never used before, like watermelon radishes, yuzu juice, and labneh cheese. Recipes are between 500 and 700 calories per portion. Delicious and good for you. So right now, you can get your first two meals free just by going to blueapron.com/twit. Check out this week's menu and get your first two meals free by going to blueapron.com/twit. And we thank Blue Apron for their support of Tech News Today.
Okay, so some big names in the tech industry have banded together to create a new nonprofit called Project Include. I love what this is all about. Joining us today to talk all about this new project is Ellen Powell and Erica Joy, two of the founding members of Project Include. How's it going to both of you?
Pretty well. How are you doing?
Good.
We're doing
fantastic. Thanks for having us.
Oh, are you kidding? It's our pleasure and it's an honor to get you both on the show today. Obviously, you know, in episodes past, we've talked a lot about diversity, inclusion, particularly in the tech space. So it's awesome to get you on, and I love to see what you guys are doing with this project. I'll just kind of throw this out to both of you and see what you have on kind of the state of technology when it comes to kind of these recurring issues right now. Basically, what moved you to kind of create Project Include?
Well, I'll take that one.
All right. I think the same thing for most of us. We had these conversations about how frustrated we were with the lack of progress or with the same ideas being rehashed but not working. And we thought, well, we can come up with a better plan than this. We can use our shared experience. We can use the research that's out there and hopefully convince people to start taking different actions that are going to actually have a meaningful impact on diversity in tech.
So who's the focus? Who are you aiming this at?
We're aiming this at startups that are around 25 to 1,000 employees. It's harder to turn a tinker. Right. So companies that are, you know, tens of thousands of employees, they have a lot more work to do than we can probably help them out with. I mean, some of our recommendations will definitely be useful for them, but we are aiming at smaller companies that are more nimble and able to change quickly.
So you kind of touched a little bit on kind of the background and experience of, you know, the eight of you that are kind of starting this effort. Tell us a little bit about the people who are involved, because you guys are doing this not necessarily as a full-time job. You're kind of fitting this in around your busy schedules on the side, but you've got some really important people involved.
Right. Should I go?
All right. I'll do the ones and then maybe you can fill in the ones I need to forget. Obviously, Erica, who has great experience from Google and is now at Slack, and she's been an engineer for over 20 years, and she's really thought about these issues and been looking at these issues for a long time from a very thoughtful way. We have Yvonne Hutchinson, who is also working on it, and she has been working at a diversity consulting firm and has been very thoughtful. She's been working with several tech startups right in the sweet spot of what we're who we're trying to help. We have Susan Wu, who is an entrepreneur and investor, and she is also at Stripe, and she has been in this world for, I think, 30 years in tech. We have Frida Kapoor Klein, who has been an investor and worked at Lotus in the early days, has been in tech for the past 40 years.
We have Laura Gomez, who worked at Twitter and now and also YouTube, and now runs her own startup, Atypica, which is focused at removing bias from the hiring pipeline. Bethany Blount, who was former Inge director, I think, at Reddit, and also was at Linden Labs, is now working on her own startup. And then we have Tracy, I always forget how to pronounce Tracy's last name.
Chow.
Okay. We have Tracy Chow, who has been working on diversity for quite some time. She started many of the conversations, especially around collecting numbers. Now she's at Pinterest.
Well, Erica, I love what you said about how you can't move a tanker. And I want to say this because neither of you did, that you both tried very hard, and we thank you. So how did you all find each other? Was it just that you all were working alone in this space? And how did you find each other to form this group?
The internet is magic. Right. So I think Ellen was the catalyst for a lot of this. We'd follow each other on Twitter for some time, and I believe Ellen probably followed a lot of people. And so she reached out to me, and we, you know, had a discussion about our ideas about fixing the issues around diversity and inclusion in tech. And Ellen had similar conversations with other people in the group. And that's how we all found each other. I introduced Wyvon just because I was like, wait, Wyvon is amazing, and she is doing a lot of good work in this space, and we need to get her involved. And so... But Ellen was mostly the catalyst for getting us all together.
So I found people that I admired. So people who had done something to try to change tech. And I thought what Erica did with the spreadsheet at Google, where she had an open spreadsheet to gather compensation from different people and showed a gap in how people are paid by gender and by race, that's extremely impactful. It's not something that most people would do. Mm-hmm. And for her to take a stand and really put in the effort and take some risk impressed me. Same thing with Tracy, to go out and tell companies, you need to start writing down what your numbers are. Look at how many people you have who are, you know, from who are women or who are from underrepresented groups, and actually track like what it looks like and be held accountable for what lack of diversity is actually in your company. So the, you know, finding people who are willing to take a stand at risk to themselves was kind of how some of this came together.
It really kind of seems like accountability, transparency, those are super important for kind of coming to terms with, you know, the elephant in the room, that there is an issue when it comes to diversity and inclusion in tech. What kind of tools is Project Include offering to CEOs of these companies? Because, I mean, obviously, you know, a big part of what you're doing is you're raising awareness, giving people who want to make a change or who want to kind of create a responsible business the kind of knowledge and information that they need to kind of steer the ship in the right direction. What are some of those tools that you offer?
So we've got many recommendations. I think the entire document is, what, 85 pages?
It's now over 100.
Oh, wow. Okay. So yeah. Over 100 pages of recommendations and guidelines for companies to try to build a diverse and inclusive culture, ranging anywhere from hiring to retention to sponsorship to mentorship. We have stuff in there for VCs. It's just very wide ranging and broad, because we wanted to address all the places that we could see where bias kind of creeps up and areas that, you know, companies don't typically look at for building diverse and inclusive workforces.
So part of what you said is that there's been a lot of talk, but not a lot of change. Ellen, I'll start with you. What if you could point to one or two things, one or two reasons why there hasn't been any change, what would those be?
I think the biggest thing is that it's actually quite hard. And it involves a lot of change. It involves making very hard trade-offs and having hard conversations about right. them. So, you know, if I have to decide whether or not I want to hire more people or hire people who are going to be diverse, it's going to take me maybe more time and energy. If I'm a company that doesn't have much diversity, it's going to take me extra effort to recruit people and get them to want to come to my company. So do I make that trade-off, or do I hire the people because I have a lot of work to do and I want to get it done?
Now, obviously, working with a small to medium-sized business or company, you know, makes the job, I suppose, a little bit easier, because you can create a culture around those guidelines and kind of build around that. And you had mentioned that, you know, turning around the large ship that is a giant corporation is a big, you know, big, huge hurdle, has many hurdles, in fact, in front of them. But it's still super important, and they definitely need help. What are some of the, why is it so challenging? And what do you think, you know, for those larger corporations, they can even do to address this in a meaningful way?
I first think that corporations can have their leadership take an active role in addressing these issues, right? There are some things that individual contributors can do. There are some things that mid-level managers can do, but ultimately the CEO or someone in a C-level position in the company has to be the one who drives the conversation and the initiative forward, because they're the ones who have the power in the company. People listen when they say, we need to get this done, mm-hmm. right? And I don't see that a lot coming from the larger companies. I think there's some education that needs to happen for some of those C-levels. And I think once that happens, and I think Project Include is a great place from the start. Once that happens, I think we'll start to see some real change. And like Ellen said, there's a lot of hesitancy to get to those real uncomfortable discussions. And unfortunately, those uncomfortable discussions are where the change happens.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been hearing a lot about the tech bubble is about to burst. You know, companies aren't getting funded. Do you think that is going to have an effect? Do you think like all of these diversity talks were, oh, well and good when, you know, the industry was booming. But do you think that's going to have an effect, all these rumors that the bubble is about to burst?
Well, I don't quite believe that there is a bubble. So I question the premise there. I feel like everything in life has its ups and downs, right? And tech is in an upswing right now, and it may go into a downswing tomorrow. It may go into a downswing 2 years from now. Who knows, right? But I feel like at the point that we hit a downswing, it'll be very important for companies to have this stuff baked in already, because then they don't have to make any changes. It's just part of who they are, part of their culture. Mm-hmm. But we're not at that place right now, so now is a great place for them to start building it into their culture.
Well, it's fantastic. I love what you're doing, and I can't wait to kind of follow it along and see what kind of change that you can make just for the new companies. It really seems like that's what this is going to really help, is kind of lay the groundwork for, I don't know, I guess the grand scheme is a new kind of generation of companies that makes this a priority from the beginning. And I think that's incredibly important. So lovely you guys are doing.
What should startups do if they're interested in getting involved and getting your guidance? What should they do?
On projectinclude.org, which I see is down in your lower third. Thank you. Mm-hmm. We have, on our about page, there's a link that says join us. And that's a forum that companies who are interested in working with us can sign up.
Well, Ellen Powell and Erica Baker, it's really just been an honor getting you on the show, and just wish you all the success in the world with Project Include. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. And thanks again for having us.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you.
Absolutely. Take care and best of luck.
Thanks for coming down.
Bye.
All right. So, you know what we have? A lot of emails.
Mm-hmm.
Our mailbag, it's overflowing. So we're going to read a few of those emails in the next segment. But before we do that, let's take a minute to thank the sponsor of this episode. That is ZipRecruiter. And, basically, you've got a business and you are realizing, at least I know I can speak for my wife because she owns a business, that it's really challenging to hire the right people for your business. It takes time out of your busy schedule, all that kind of stuff. You need to know where to post your job to find the best candidates. And if you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post on all of those job sites, all of the top job sites. And it's just difficult to do that willy-nilly. With ZipRecruiter, you can do that very easily. Posting jobs in one place isn't enough to find all those quality candidates, so don't leave it up to chance. Use ZipRecruiter.com, and you'll post to more than 100 job boards, including social media networks like Facebook, Twitter, and Google+, all with a single click. You just post one time, and you'll watch as your candidates roll into the ZipRecruiter interface. It's super easy to use, and ZipRecruiter offers optimized pages that make it even easier. It makes it look great on any screen. Add their mobile apply process for more visitors and more applicants. And you can find candidates in any city or any industry nationwide. No more juggling emails, no more calls to your office. Who needs a call? You can add multiple users to your account. And it's all about just kind of like managing the incoming influx of these qualified candidates. So you can screen them with real-world questions, free form, multiple choice answers, yes, no formats, all that kind of stuff to get to the heart of whether they should work for you. You can view their responses in conjunction with their beautifully formatted resumes, rate them, hire the right person, and get on with your business. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 800,000 businesses. More than 100 million candidate applications have been delivered. So you can check it out right now. Try ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. That's ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. And we thank ZipRecruiter for their support of Tech News Today. All right, so we get a lot of awesome email from you to tnt@twit.tv. And today we thought we'd answer a few of those on the show. We've had some kind of piling up over the weekend, and we're flush with email. So let's take a look at a few of those. Buckle up. First up is Camilo Muriel, who writes, on episode 1503, you guys talked about the parents reading bedtime stories using VR while going out and said it's useless. I don't remember saying it's useless, but
because you weren't on episode 1503.
Okay. Well, I would not have said it was useless. continuing, but I can see an opportunity for moms and dads in the military serving overseas away 6 or more months at a time. This can allow a close bond between parent and children where webcams have limitations. Yes, it won't replace the real parent being there, but I don't think it's technology gone mad. It's an example of technology helping families who don't have the privilege of being next to their child when they go to sleep every night. My wife reads to my kids every night when she puts them to sleep, but I don't see anything wrong with using this once in a while for 10 to 20 minutes to be part of it as well. Phones and video chat can only do so much. I don't think this feeds into the mom guilt, nor should parents hand over their parent card. I'm keeping my parent card in my wallet. No one gets their hands on my parent card.
I put my parent card next to my woman card, and they work both equally well.
I don't have a woman card.
No, you don't. Too bad for you. So this was a story. I don't know if you saw it. You were having someone was digging around in your teeth.
That's right.
And we were talking about it.
They were cutting my gums.
But Samsung has a new thing that they were pushing. It's Gear VR bedtime stories. And maybe, okay, Kara, you could pull up a link because it's amazing. Mm-hmm. You put on you're in Las Vegas for NAB, and your daughter puts on the goggles, and they have this little cardboard face on them, and then you put on the goggles, and then you can still read to her. And it's I don't know if I said it was useless. Ian Thompson was on the show, and you know Ian, he probably said it. He might have said it was useless. My argument was that, you know, it's great to read to your kids. It's wonderful, indispensable. And sometimes you also go on business trips. Also great and important. So someone else could read to your kid. But this is important, that sometimes if you are in the military or you have another job where you're away for 6 months or more, I totally get that and I understand. So that's a good point. And thank you, Camillo, for pointing that out.
Yeah, the only...
Nightmares, crazy creepiness of having VR on your face right before bed?
Maybe a little bit of that. Like, don't they say that looking at your screen right before bed actually messes with your sleep patterns? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's the blue light and all that kind of stuff. It messes with your circadian rhythm. So maybe there's a little bit of that. I might be a little hesitant of it only from the fact that technology winds my kids up as opposed to calming them down. And I notice that time and time again. It makes me wonder why I let them have the tablet for an hour in the morning on Saturdays. But maybe a little more than an hour. Anyways, reeling it back in. I don't know. Like, I can totally see the value of this. I can also see how it might be kind of, you know, detrimental to sleep patterns. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if that, but that's probably having some sort of time, connection time with the person that's reading is better than not. So I think it's a good use of the platform.
Right.
I like it.
And if you're going to like say goodnight by Skype, like that's a technology too. So,
totally.
You know, I guess. Yeah. Chumley in the chat room says when he's away helping America for 9 months, he will beg his wife not to put these goggles on.
I guess if you're depending on where you're at, you might not be able to bring a VR goggle with you. So,
or maybe that's what you use. I don't know.
I don't know. That could be how you're helping America. Anyways.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know about Gear VR, but thank you for writing in.
Yeah, I like it.
So Chad from Portage, Wisconsin writes, I just finished listening to Friday's TNT, and I'm a bit confused by the coverage of Cortana and Bing. I'm wondering if Siri gives a checkbox for default browser. Do you have a choice with Google Now when setting up the Echo? Can you pick its back-end software? I do not use any of these services, so I really do not know. As I understand it, Bing is the AI of Cortana. What makes it really tick? It really makes sense to just keep it controlled. So this was a story, again, about how Microsoft had decided there were third-party ways you could get around having Cortana search Google, you know, or Safari, probably not Safari, but probably Google or other browsers, other search engines, I mean. And then they closed that off. They said you couldn't do that. So I guess what we were talking about it in another story where Microsoft was saying, like, look, we have this kind of thing like IFTTT,
if this and that.
And they were saying, like, you can use all these different services. And, like, the new Microsoft kind of says, like, use anything. I'm going to have apps everywhere. And then it was like, yeah, but don't.
But not with Cortana.
Yeah.
Yeah, when it's so dialed into the experience on these personal kind of digital assistant apps, I guess I can kind of understand it. But maybe that's just because I'm so used to the Google Now implementation, which, by the way, you don't have a choice with Google Now. If you're using Google Now, it's to search Google and it's tied into Google services. So there is no like way of routing that to something else. As far as Android is concerned, like you can change the functionality with other apps that basically take the same command and route it someplace different. But Google Now doesn't specifically let you, you know, use Google Now services, but with this other search engine instead. And I think that just ends up making the integration a little bit nice, you know, a little bit more tight as far as that's concerned. So I guess it doesn't really surprise me that Microsoft would want to have a little bit more control with Cortana. Would it be amazing if it was open and worked, you know, without any issues with all of these other services? That would certainly set it apart. But then what does Microsoft have to gain from that if it's not pulling from its own resources? It really seems like a way, I don't know, kind of an entry into their services, and that's why it exists in the first place.
Right. And maybe Chad didn't say this, but maybe he was also just taking issue with the my knee-jerk reaction to criticize what Microsoft does. So if so, point taken. Thank you. I will work on that.
Full disclosure, used to work for Microsoft.
I did. I did work for Microsoft. So, yeah, maybe I'm making up for that by criticizing all the time.
Like, oh, Microsoft, the day I remember those days.
Yes. It wasn't that bad. It was an excellent company to work for.
Mm-hmm.
And now this is a much better company to work for.
It's definitely a more, yes, the modern Microsoft has changed a lot in the last year. And I think it's endeared a lot of people back to Microsoft, whereas before, you know, to a certain degree, some people were just kind of writing it off as somewhat irrelevant in kind of like the current modern mobile age. And I think they're kind of rewriting that. So it's a good thing. Matt Schultz writes, I have a confession. And since I've been listening to TNT for all these years, I'll give you the scoop. You see, I am Satoshi Nakamoto. Want me to prove it? That is the tricky part, as I lost the password to my Bitcoin wallet due to a failed hard drive. It's embarrassing not having a viable background, so I've never admitted it before. Thank you in advance for not following this with a Carbonite advertisement. Wait a minute, I should not have read that last part.
No, get it? You know, backup. He's making a backup joke.
Okay, as long as it's a joke.
It's a joke. You know, don't remind me I didn't back up.
Yeah.
Poor Satoshi didn't back up, and that was his problem.
Oh, poor Satoshi.
Everyone would have known, or Matt.
I feel like this Satoshi thing comes up every, like, 6 months. Like, yes. We think we know who Satoshi is, then we realize we don't actually know who the creator of Bitcoin is.
But it is an interesting mystery, I think.
Maybe it's
was
you.
Was it you?
No. See, we came to the same conclusion at the same time. Maybe it was David Sheneman, TNT's fan of the day, at TV Wonder on Twitter, who sent us this picture of a... Can we show this on air? It's a lawnmower. It's a lawnmower. I think Twitter blocked the last lawnmower we tried to show. He says, how I watch TNT with Jason Howell and Megan Maroney to get my daily tech news, except I just listen while I'm mowing. And to be honest, David, I don't care if you listen or you watch, just as long as you consume. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup and post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook, and use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT. We're going to find it.
And after the break, bubbles. And by that, bubbles. I mean the tech bubble. Is it popping or not? But before we get to that, let's take a minute to thank Trunk Club, the sponsor of this episode. There are two types of men out there, guys who love shopping for clothes but are short on time, and those of you who hate it. Either way, take heart. Now you can get clothes that fit perfectly and look amazing without ever stepping into a store again, thanks to Trunk Club. And guess what? Trunk Club is no longer just for men anymore. This very scarf I'm wearing right now came from my stylist,
nice
Carolyn.
Scarf.
Thank you.
I should get one of those scarves.
You can.
I might have to wear that tomorrow. Just saying.
Well, you can. I mean, that's fine. You can borrow it.
Okay.
Carolyn at Trunk Club is my stylist. She was super patient with me. I explained everything I liked and didn't like. She sent me a few trunks of clothes. I'm picky. I'm not that easy to shop for. But somehow Carolyn got a lot of things right. And everything that was not right, I sent back. So whether you're searching for men's clothes or women's clothes, just type in your measurements, share your likes and dislikes, and your personal stylist will help you look and feel your best with clothes that fit you perfectly. Trunk Club stylists are professionally trained in all the brands that Trunk Club offers, but there's so much more to Trunk Club than that. They'll pick your clothes from over 80 top brands and ship them right to your door. Keep what you like, send back what you don't. Your stylist takes the time to understand your unique look. And if you live in Dallas or New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, or DC, you can stop by one of the Trunk Club clubhouses to work with your stylist in person. Now, Trunk Club is not a subscription service. Shipping is always free, and you have 10 days to try on the clothes. make a statement at your next big event on your calendar with a look that's handpicked just for you and your style. Get started at Trunk Club today. Premium clothes, expert advice, no work, thanks to your very own personal stylist at Trunk Club. And Trunk Club is backed by Nordstrom, which means they have the highest standards in quality and customer service. Get started at trunkclub.com/TNT. That's trunkclub.com/TNT. And we thank Trunk Club for their support.
What is the best barometer for knowing whether we're in the midst of a tech bubble or not? Huh, Megan? Huh?
Probably whether we say it is or not.
That's probably a big part of it, actually. And by we, not just us. I would like to think that we wield that kind of power, but no, we don't.
We don't.
It turns out that ping pong tables might be to tech industry bubble pops what a dog's senses are to early earthquake detection. For example, in late 2014, Twitter stopped its regular order of ping pong tables from Billiard Wholesale. And we all know where Twitter is heading at the moment. It turns out the drop in sales of ping pong tables correlates with the amount of venture capital deals being made in Silicon Valley. That's according to the owner of Billiard Wholesale, anyways. Because what tech company would be caught dead without a ping pong perk for employees? When times are tough, that perk goes out the window. I hope not literally, but...
you know, I experienced
we're losing that. Money. Throw it out the window.
I was part of the dot-com crash in 2000, and things did go out the window. Those expensive chairs, the expensive office chairs. I forgot what they were called, but like there was...
The Arrow something. Yeah.
They were going out of windows about. In 2000. It was a good time.
If you were standing outside the window with your arms open waiting for a chair.
Aeron chairs. Thank you, Patrick.
Yes, Aeron. There
we
go.
He was maybe the thrower of an Aeron chair in one of his dot-coms that he worked at.
He knew. Yeah, Patrick knows.
This is fascinating stuff. I mean, really, causation, correlation. Who cares? It's funny.
Yeah, I don't know how accurate it is necessarily, but I do know that most like big up-and-coming tech startups and all those, you know, all those kind of business of that ilk, always want to kind of wow their potential employees or make their current employees comfortable with these kind of perks, ping pong included. Back in the early 2000s, I guess the big deal was pool tables were a big perk. And the difference between now and then is that ping pong tables have absolutely no resale value. So if these companies go under, they're not going to get anything for these ping pong tables. They're like, you know, pennies to the dollar versus a pool table. You can, you know, at least, I don't know, make a little bit of money extra back and take it down to your employees who need it.
Well, Dr. Morbius in the chat room is saying foosball, which was also my point. That was the tech TV game of choice, foosball. And it seems better than pool. Pool seems sort of solitary. There's, I guess, four people can play pool.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Pool, flexibility with pool.
Yeah. Foosball was my jam back at tech TV.
Okay. Ping pong's always kind of been my jam, but we don't have one here. We'll have to work on that.
No, but we have a thriving no business. We don't need a pool table.
This is no sign of a tech bubble pop, the fact that we've never bought a ping pong table here at Twit. By the way, it isn't just a Billiard Wholesale saying this. Sports Authority in San Francisco also has seen rapid declines in ping pong sales, table sales, since last December. So is it coincidence? Maybe?
I don't know.
But I don't know.
So it's a good question.
It's very important. We should devote an entire first half of next episode to this important subject. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 12 a.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can always be a part of the show. Just email us at tnt@twit.tv. And you can also leave us a short voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW, or find us on Twitter. We are at Tech News Today TV.
You can subscribe to the show, and you should. You'll be the first to get it if you can't watch it live. Go to twit.tv/TNT or just go to iTunes or whatever podcast catcher you use. You can subscribe to our show, the video, the audio version. I suggest the video so you can see when Jason has a weird thing on his teeth. And if you want to tweet at me, you can tweet at me at Megan Maroney. And if you only can do the audio, I'll send you a picture of the weird thing on his teeth.
And I'm at Jason Howell. Thanks to our technical director, Kara Cole, and all the folks who help us produce the show every single day. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all tomorrow.